April 30th, 1993, a posh flat in London's Mayfair neighborhood. Alfred Taubman sits in an armchair sipping tea. He's the 69-year-old American chairman of one of the world's largest auction houses, Sotheby's. He smiles at his guest, Sir Anthony Tennant, the Brit who's recently been appointed chairman of the auction house Christie's, Sotheby's' biggest rival. But beneath Taubman's friendly facade is a shrewd businessman, credited with saving Sotheby's from ruin a decade earlier. The two men are competitors. Their rivalry goes back centuries. Taubman starts by scolding Tennant.
Anthony, the disparaging comments need to stop. Why is Christie's always taking shots at Sotheby's in the press?
Tennant peers at Taubman through his square-rimmed tortoiseshell glasses, his aristocratic lineage evident in the dapper way he conducts himself. He's all business, while Taubman's got a more amiable, friendly nature. Taubman's parents lost everything in the Great Depression, and while he is now very wealthy and successful, a certain down-to-earth air remains. Tennant stiffens.
Well, Alfred, why do you make yourself such an easy target? We see right through your game, cozying up to potential clients by making generous donations to their favorite charities. It's a disgrace. We do nothing of the sort, but I keep hearing about Christie's promising non-refundable loans to sellers. You know, it's risky, and it makes absolutely no financial sense.
Tennant grips his armchair.
And then once you've lured in your clients, you waive the commission. Christie's is being frozen out. Why would a buyer even consider going with anyone else? And that brings me to what I wanted to discuss today.
Taubman eyes him quizzically. Tennant continues.
We have to de-escalate our commissions war. We're only hurting each other. I propose a rate of 15% on a sliding scale.
Taubman considers the ramifications of Tennant's statement.
A fixed commission rate that tops out at 15%? So we eliminate bargaining altogether? Exactly. So when a client comes to us, we say, I'm sorry, that is our rate, and you have to accept it. If you don't like it, then find another auction house. But of course, we both know there are no other auction houses with the profile of Christie's or Sotheby's.
Uh-huh. We both maximize our profits.
Yes. It only helps us both.
Taubman and Tennant sit back, taking in the magnitude of what they've just agreed to. Then, Tennant makes a request.
I'd like to bring Christopher Dobbage in on this.
Dobbage is Christie's chief executive.
He should speak to D.D. Brooks.
Diana D.D. Brooks is currently the president of Sotheby's North America, and she's eager for a promotion. Tennant raises his eyebrows.
I've heard she's fierce.
Precisely why she's the perfect person to navigate this negotiation.
Obviously, this is a sensitive matter. It would be wise to keep it to the four of us.
I agree. That's in everyone's best interest.
All right. I'll speak to Dobbage and let him know to expect a call from Brooks.
The two men shake hands. What the chairman just shook on is more than a peace agreement. They've just agreed to collude on price fixing, a major crime. For a while, both auction houses will profit handsomely from their agreement. But the day will soon come when Taubman and Tennant will be forced to answer for their crimes, but not before they're betrayed by those they trust most. By the time the dust settles, one of the two men will be in prison, and the art world will be forever changed. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson.
Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. The art auction houses Sotheby's and Christie's are global institutions that rake in billions every year. But both houses had humble origins. They were founded in London in the 18th century. For most of the next 200 years, they served mainly as a way to quickly liquidate art, furniture, jewelry, and other valuables after a financial catastrophe. Insiders say there are three D's that govern the auction world: death, divorce, and debt. Their status changed in the 1950s as they ventured into the sale of impressionist and modern art, a move that created the concept of art auctions as glamorous luxury events that made people gasp at the vast sums paid for the masterpieces. Over the next several decades, they gained steam. And in more recent years, big fish from Asia and the Middle East are bidding secretly from afar by phone, forcing public museums to struggle to compete with soaring prices in order to add to their collections. Sotheby's and Christie's may have helped drive prices into the stratosphere, but it was their desire to rule the art world together that sent these fabled auction houses crashing back to earth in humiliating fashion. This is Episode 1, Going Once. April 1983. Alfred Taubman sits in his stately Palm Beach home. It's a decade before his fateful meeting with his arch rival, Christie's chairman, Sir Anthony Tennant. Opposite Taubman at the breakfast table is his friend, British aristocrat David Metcalf. He's an investment banker and insurance broker who counts the royal family among his closest friends. Through the porthole windows next to them, the pool shimmers in the spring sun. Metcalf leans in, holding a cup of coffee.
"I have an investment tip for you that could change your life."
Taubman's intrigued. He made his fortune as a shopping mall developer, and he doesn't need any more money. But for a few months now, he's been on the hunt for a new investment opportunity, something that piques his imagination.
"I'm all ears." "Sotheby's."
Taubman chuckles.
"Art class was always my favorite in school, although Sotheby's is known for its impressionists. Mid-century modern is more my style."
"That doesn't matter. All the papers are running stories this week about how they're fighting a hostile takeover. I have it on good authority that they're desperate for a white knight to buy the company."
"Well, if they would be happy to talk to me, I'd be happy to talk to them."
"Good. I'll arrange an introduction. I don't think you'll be disappointed."
"Sotheby's, I think this could be fun."
"But haven't they been struggling? A prime candidate for a hostile takeover, as you suggested?"
"And it's true, they did lose money last year, but think about it. There's $25 billion in art turnover every year. Think of all that untapped market potential."
"Well,
If I did make a move, I'd want to think of it more in retail terms. That's the world I know. Landlord and investor. When you really think about it, selling art is not so different from selling root beer. After several months of negotiation and courting, on September 19, 1983, Taubman buys Sotheby's for $139 million. On the surface, the investment looks foolish. Sotheby's lost $5 million the previous year. But Taubman is bored with typical real estate deals and entranced by the romance of the art world. He can't wait to prove everyone wrong. October 1983, the London Sotheby's office. Taubman enters his new office for the first time since the acquisition. Wearing a sharp, dark gray suit, he carries himself with confidence. As he strides through the lobby, employees stop to shake his hand.
Nice to meet you. Thank you. Pleased to meet you. Now, if everyone can please gather in the sales room.
Good to see you here, sir.
Well, thank you for the warm reception. I wanted to speak to you all first, and then later today I'll fly to New York to meet your American colleagues. I'm so thrilled to have purchased this fine company. I have such respect for everything it stands for, most of all, the hard-working staff. I plan to give everyone a pay increase, effective immediately. But there are some changes I'd like to make. You see, I've been on the other side of this business as a Sotheby's client, and never have I been treated so haughtily. Although Christie's came pretty darn close. But all of that to say, we aren't here to alienate customers. I want you to pledge that your manners will improve and that you will show that you care deeply about what customers think. Your expertise and scholarship are beyond question, but you're in a service business, and if you can't behave properly, you don't belong. I'm sure you're all well aware my experience is not in art or in auctions.
In the back of the room, two employees quietly confer.
Seriously? This American social climber is lecturing us on etiquette? His experience is in shopping malls. What does he know about art auctions?
I'm not here to tell anyone how to do their job. You are the experts. I trust you. And I am optimistic for the future of Sotheby's. This is the beginning of a very exciting new chapter.
Taubman knows how to rally a crowd, but it's his instinct to see art as a commodity, much like real estate, that transforms the company. As the new chairman, he takes Sotheby's private and reorganizes it. He steers business away from dealers and towards private buyers to increase profits. And he quickly earns a reputation for being highly critical. He pores over every catalog, scrutinizing photo choices to ensure everything is perfectly poised for success before a big auction. But in the end, it's Taubman's use of loans to potential buyers who might not otherwise be able to buy a piece of art that changes everything. This financial tool takes Sotheby's from the brink of bankruptcy to the top of the auction world. But in time, it will not only create bad blood with Christie's, it will also doom Sotheby's. That bad blood becomes evident when American heiress Florence Gould dies in 1983. Sotheby's and Christie's both immediately begin circling her $124 million estate, each determined to land the auction rights, whatever it takes. The crown jewel is her art collection, which includes a Van Gogh. But Sotheby's is playing to win. The auction house captures the collection after making an unprecedented series of promises, including removing the seller's commission. And then it throws a splashy sale in New York. Sotheby's walks away with $32.6 million for the 55-piece art collection. A smashing success. July 1985, Sotheby's New York headquarters.
Taubman sits in his office, examining a catalog for an upcoming auction. Dee Dee Brooks enters Taubman's office. In her mid-30s, 6 feet tall and blonde, she's the kind of person who commands attention. Currently the COO, she's been quickly working her way up the ranks for several years. She addresses Taubman.
Estimated sales figures for the season are in.
Taubman leans forward. And?
$642 million, an increase of 17% from last season.
And what about Christie's?
Their highest ever at $475 million, but an increase of only 8%.
Taubman is delighted. Well, that is phenomenal news.
Christie's will strike back. Our gains will light a fire under them.
I can't wait to see them try. And try they will. Determined to pull ahead of Sotheby's, Christie's begins to play fast and loose, inflating its sales and fumbling efforts to snag key acquisitions. It's a recipe for humiliation. But they have another move to make, and that's to poach Sotheby's turf. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. July 19th, 1985. David Bathurst, the chairman of Christie's, sits in a conference room opposite his lawyer. Bathurst is 47 years old, with thin, carefully styled hair. But he doesn't look well. He's sweaty and pale, as if he might be sick. His lawyer, Alan Wenzel, leans across the table.
We need to put together a statement. Tell me again what happened.
On May 19th, 1981, Christie's held an auction. There were 8 paintings up for sale, very high-end works. Monet, Degas, Renoir, Gauguin, 2 Van Goghs. At the time, I reported that we sold 3 paintings for a total of $5.6 million.
And that was the truth?
No. We sold only one, the Degas, for $2.2 million. I lied about the others.
Well, why did you lie?
To help the owner of the piece. If the works don't do well at auction, it's harder to sell them later. They received no significant bids at all. And had another reason.
Which was?
To maintain stability in the art market, which might have become depressed if the public discovered that only one painting was sold.
Well, Well, the good news is that the seller's court case against you has been dismissed. The judge feels you didn't commit any fraud. You gave your best opinion when you estimated what the paintings would fetch at auction, and it's not your fault that the market is unpredictable. The fickle mind of the modern art collector. You know, I'm still at a loss as to why the sale didn't go better.
Well, the market can be rebellious.
But while you personally are not facing charges, Christie's owes the city of New York $80,000 in penalties. After that is settled with the Department of Consumer Affairs, they will be allowed to continue conducting business in the city. I have to resign. I'm afraid I recommend the same. They're also asking that you turn over your auctioneer's license and resign from the board.
Following Bathurst's resignation, the market value of Christie's dives by $20 million. And when it comes to light that Christie's New York president Christopher Burge was aware of the lies, he's also forced to relinquish his auctioneer's license. To make matters worse, Christie's makes another embarrassing blunder in the fall of 1985 when the press gets the word that they failed to recognize a valuable Gainsborough portrait at an auction. Considering Christie's prides itself on expertise in the old masters, it's a shocking oversight that further tarnishes the company's reputation. March 30th, 1987, London. In a room at Christie's auction house, a pair of guards clad in white gloves carry a painting onto the stage as a hushed crowd watches. The painting is Van Gogh's Sunflowers. On a 39 by 30 inch canvas, its gold and yellow hues reflect the light. It's a stunner that's well known in the art world. It was famously painted only a month before Van Gogh sliced his ear off. If the sale goes well, it could help Christie's recover from their recent PR debacles. Nearly 500 buyers and enthusiasts dressed in black tie formal wear pack the auction room. In adjoining rooms, an additional 600 overflow guests watch the proceedings on closed-circuit television. Charles Alsop, the chairman of Christie's, walks onto the stage. Tonight, he is not only chairman, but auctioneer. He steps up to the microphone.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We open the bidding at £5 million.
Right away, someone from the audience speaks up.
$5,500,000.
Another bidder jumps in.
$6 million.
6.5.
In the back of the room, two art enthusiasts take in the scene.
Remarkable that Christie's got sunflowers.
His friend leans in.
The seller is a descendant of an old client, but they nearly lost it to Sotheby's in the 11th hour. I heard a family member tried to argue that Sotheby's is where the art market is. The old family tie just barely prevailed.
I'll bet this sets a record. I guess 18 million pounds, huh?
20 million.
On stage, Alsop is taking bids left and right. The buzz is contagious. In less than 5 minutes, the price has skyrocketed.
We have a bid coming in via telephone.
There's a momentary hush as the crowd waits for the offer. A Christie's employee dressed in all black announces the bid.
$22.5 million. $22.5 million. Do we have 23?
Another employee raises an auction paddle.
$24.75 million. 24.75. Do I hear 25? 24.75. Going once, going twice. Sold.
Remarkable. That's almost $40 million U.S. I wonder who it is. I'm guessing it was a Japanese collector. That's more than triple the record for an auction painting. Goes to show, Christie's is back on top.
It is a stunning coup for Christie's, especially since Sotheby's has been king of impressionist paintings for 3 decades. With one anonymous phone bid,
Christie's is able to transcend the Bathurst scandal. Over at Sotheby's, D.D. Brooks, president of Sotheby's North America, takes notice of Christie's unexpected windfall and becomes determined to score a big win herself. On November 11, 1987, at a Sotheby's black tie auction in New York, Van Gogh's Irises sells for $53.9 million, shattering the record set at Christie's just 8 months prior. The buyer is revealed to be one Alan Bond, an Australian real estate mogul. But when it comes to light that not everyone was on the same page about the sale, things get turbulent. Late November 1987, the Sotheby's New York office. CEO Michael Ainsley storms into his boss Alfred Taubman's office. Ainsley was hired by Taubman 3 years ago and has been using his business expertise to bring in more private clients. He's increased global brand recognition and moved big sales to weekends to attract buyers who are busy with high-powered careers during the week. But today, he feels betrayed by his own colleagues. Ainsley leans on Taubman's desk, his eyes blazing.
Well, is it true?
Taubman looks perplexed.
What are you talking about? Is it true that we financed half the money Alan Bond bought the Van Gogh with? So, what if it is? We have a company policy that any loan greater than $5 million requires approval from the entire executive committee. This loan was $27 million. Did you know? We haven't broken any laws. Loans are nothing new. Christie's does it too. But a loan of this amount for a record-breaking sale. Who authorized this? Dee Dee did. I had a feeling. She never listens. Her style is just attack, attack, attack. Constantly breaking rank in board meetings. It was only a matter of time before something like this happened. Do you have any idea how bad it will look for us if this gets out? We'll be accused of artificially inflating the market.
It takes 2 years, but in 1989, the press does get wind of the large loan to Bond. And to make matters more embarrassing, even with the loan, he's still unable to pay up. The mess highlights the issue with auction houses allowing big purchases to be made on credit. The entire sale could fall through if they put their trust in the wrong buyer. As a result, the Van Gogh is resold in a private transaction to the J. Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles. It falls to Ainsley to do damage control with angry, high-profile Sotheby's clients, including Leonard Lauder of Estée Lauder Cosmetics fame. Existing clients worry that if buyers can use credit, they'll end up paying higher prices. So Ainsley creates a new policy that Sotheby's will not lend against a work of art until it has been owned by its current owner for at least a year. Taubman and Brooks are against the new policy, but the move helps calm existing clients who forgive Sotheby's for the misstep. As the 1980s come to a close, even amid controversy, both Sotheby's and Christie's are thriving. The art market seems unstoppable. But as a new decade dawns, a collapsing economy spells trouble for the auction houses, and it's bigger than any loan can fix. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
May 15th, 1990. New York City. Christie's. A hushed crowd sips champagne at a black tie auction as they watch the stage closely. Christopher Burge, the president of Christie's New York, peers at the crowd over his wire-framed glasses. He's the evening's auctioneer, and he's particularly excited to introduce the next lot.
Next, we have Portrait of Dr. Gachet by Vincent van Gogh. This painting shows Paul Ferdinand Gachet, a homeopathic doctor who cared for Van Gogh during his final years. It was painted in 1890, shortly before the artist's suicide, and many say it doubles as a self-portrait. Absolutely pristine condition. We start the bidding at $20 million.
But in the back of the room, Chairman Charles Alsop and Christopher Davidge, head of Christie's London, are anxious. Alsop leans over to Davidge.
So far tonight, several of the pictures have sold below their estimates.
Well, hopefully this one turns the night around.
This would have been unheard of 6 months ago.
Well, the market is changing. But we still have the Manet and the Toulouse-Lautrec.
I just love to beat that Sotheby's Van Gogh record.
Back on stage, Burge is enthusiastically taking bids.
50 million. Do I hear 51?
A bidder raises their paddle.
51. Do I hear 52?
Another bidder jumps in.
That's 52. Do I have 53?
Another bidder raises their paddle. Davidge straightens up.
53.9 is the Sotheby's record for irises.
The bidding continues. And finally, Japanese businessman Hidito Kobayashi, head of the Kobayashi Gallery of Tokyo, is ready to make his move. He raises his hand for the winning bid.
That's 82.5 million. Going once, going twice, and sold.
By the end of the night, Christie's rakes in $269.4 million in sales, a record for the auction house. But the number is still within the pre-sale estimates. And somewhat embarrassingly, 23 of the 81 works of art up for auction failed to sell, with an additional 22 selling for an amount lower than the low estimate. For the last 5 years, the art market has been in a seemingly unstoppable boom, with prices more than doubling each year. But this roller coaster of an auction signals that something is changing. Through the ups and downs, the rivalry between Christie's and Sotheby's remains hot. A few days after Christie's breaks records with Van Gogh, Sotheby's sells Renoir's Au Moulin de la Galette for $78.1 million. But by June, there's more evidence of trouble. Across the pond, art sales take a nosedive, with half of all artwork up for auction failing to sell. And by the latter half of 1990, things take even more of a downward turn. November 7th, 1990, Sotheby's offices, New York City. Alfred Taubman and Dee Dee Brooks meet in Taubman's office. The chairman looks as if he hasn't had any sleep. They were up late in an auction last night, and it was not a cheerful evening.
It's not good. More than half of the art on offer last night went unsold. It was a great lineup. Warhol, Lichtenstein, Rothko.
We were predicted to make between 39 and 52 million last night. We walked away with just under 20.
Yes, the recession has hit the art market.
It's embarrassing. A black tie auction in the middle of a recession. We look like fools.
The auction isn't the problem. God help us if we ever take the theater out of this business. It would be awfully boring.
Well, Christie's has their own auction tonight. I doubt they'll fare much better. The offerings are similar. Warhol, Pollock.
Everyone will be watching very closely. If Christie's fails too,
Well, that's a bad sign for all of us.
But if they succeed, it puts even more pressure on.
We have to focus on the Ford sale.
Next week, Sotheby's will auction off the art collection of auto industry tycoon Henry Ford II. They've guaranteed his heirs over $50 million for the 35 works of art for sale. Guarantees are controversial in the art world. While common practice and even necessary to win high-profile lots, they are financially risky for the auction houses and often the make-or-break factor that makes a seller go with one auction house versus another.
I'm concerned we promised too much.
Well, it's too late to walk that promise back now. We just need to bring in as many potential buyers as we can. Someone out there must still be interested in buying some art.
That night, the Christie's sale is nearly as disappointing as Sotheby's. Only about half of their lots sell, and for $10 million under the lowest estimate for the evening. And Sotheby's Ford sale is a disaster, too, with nearly half of the 35 works failing to sell. The following day, Sotheby's stock dives to a low for the year as they take a $5 million loss on the guarantee made to Ford's estate. In the midst of the drama, Dee Dee Brooks is promoted to chief executive of Sotheby's operations in all of North and South America. She vows to be more conservative with guarantees, but the company is going to need more than that to survive. By late 1991, Christie's sales are down 60%, and Sotheby's is down 66%. Christie's is gaining market share and nearly neck and neck with its longtime rival. It is these tense circumstances that lead to the fateful meeting of Taubman and Tennant in April 1993, and their agreement to collude. Later that same day, Tennant visits the office of Christopher Dobbage, Christie's chief executive.
Come in.
Tennant enters, holding three pages of handwritten notes. He closes the door behind him.
I had a very good meeting this morning with Alfred Taubman of Sotheby's.
Tennant hands over his three pages of notes to a perplexed Dobbage.
Read this. It will give you some idea of what we have agreed to.
Dobbage skims the document.
It's a full and frank summary of our meeting.
This part here. A schedule exists. We should get back to it. 15% downward on a sliding scale. You're referring to the commission rates?
The published seller's commission rates, yes.
We are considering publishing a scale as with the buyer's premium that would not be negotiable. If anyone wants to bargain on the new scale, we will tell them to go elsewhere.
I'd like to have the fixed seller's commission in effect before the end of this year. Christie's will announce first, and Sotheby's will follow.
So you're passing this off to me?
Well, you should expect a phone call from Dee Dee Brooks at Sotheby's. I'd like you to both research these agreed-upon points in more detail and work them into the business structure.
Dobbage considers both the document and his boss, aware of what's being asked of him. He understands that he's being asked to do the dirty work. He hesitates for a moment.
All right.
I'll expect a phone call. Excellent. And, of course, your discretion.
And just like that, the collusion is set into motion. As the effects of a crumbling economy impact the art world, both Sotheby's and Christie's are resorting to extreme measures to ensure the continued success of auction houses. But with great reward comes great potential consequences. In our next episode, Brooks and Dobbage begin a series of secret meetings and eventually put their plans to raise profits in motion. But it won't be long before the authorities begin to take notice. And what started as collusion will soon become everyone for themselves.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 1 of Sotheby's vs. Christie's for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said, those scenes or dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Aaron Conley wrote this story, voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor, edited and produced by Emily Frost, sound design by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling, fact-checking by Will Tavlin. Our managing producers are Tanja Thigpen and Matt Gant. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.